Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and a man who calls everything right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Week 3 in the National Football League season, 2023 NFL football season. All types of nasty work in Week 3. The Dolphins, the Miami Dolphins, put 70 points and 726 yards of total offense on the woefully inept and beleaguered Denver Broncos. It's a good thing weed is legal in the state of Colorado. They're going to need it. On Saturday, the Colorado Buffaloes got their asses kicked by the Oregon Ducks 42-6, 42-3. And then the following day on Sunday, the Denver Broncos get sent to the shadow realm, to a parallel universe, a third dimension, to the upper room. They got earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of them by the Miami Dolphins. 70-20, a 50-point blowout in an organized NFL professional football game. But wait, there's more nasty work in Week 3. Kansas City and Chicago, a complete mismatch on paper and also a mismatch in real life. Kansas City at one point of the game had 41 points. Justin Fields, the much maligned quarterback of the Chicago Bears, 39 passing yards. That is not a punchline. That's actual fact. Kansas City had 41 points. At the same time, Justin Fields had 39 yards. Is it over for him in Chicago? More on that later. The biggest story of that game: Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce had a special guest in attendance. World-renowned pop singer Taylor Swift was on hand for this public evisceration of the pathetic, putrid, garbage, absolutely disgraceful Chicago Bears, getting thrown out the club, thrown off a balcony by Kansas City. Taylor Swift was the biggest story coming out this game. To most people, to me, I don't give two shits, a rat's ass, or a flying fuck about Taylor Swift. I'll go ahead and say that on record. I'm not worried or concerned about any Swifties coming in my direction. I'm a fully grown adult 38-year-old black man. I do not listen to Taylor Swift. I cannot name, if you held me up at gunpoint and said name 5 Taylor Swift songs, I'll just get shot in the head. I'll just die. I can't do it. If you want to have a conversation about Mary J. Blige or Erykah Badu, we can talk about that. But Taylor Swift, I'll just say I'm not the target demographic for that. No disrespect, no shade to her. She does her thing. She sells out football stadiums all over the country. Big time star. She matters. So I'm not going to take anything away from her. But all the hoopla and hype and hysteria about Taylor Swift being at a football game just did not fully resonate with me. It did resonate on this level. Apparently, Travis Kelce and Kansas City were so confident they were going to annihilate the Chicago Bears, they decided, you know what? If you want to come see me play for the first time, this is the game you should come see. Come see me play against arguably the worst team in pro football. This is homecoming. That's how Kansas City looked at Chicago. We're going to bring Taylor Swift to this game. We're not going to bring her to a game we might lose. We're not going to do that. We're going to bring the biggest pop icon. Well, even that's a debate between her and Beyonce. It depends on who you talk to. You talk to a black woman, they're going to say Beyonce. You talk to a white woman, they're going to say Taylor Swift. Regardless of the fact, we're going to bring one of the biggest pop stars in the world to a football game because we know, we have 1,000% confidence, we are going to kick the shit out of the Chicago Bears. Stone cold stunt all over what used to be a proud NFL franchise. That's embarrassing. If you're the Bears, you got to figure some shit out. You got to figure out a lot of things out. Your quarterback, your team in general, your front office, what is going on in Chicago? Washington, the Commanders, 2-0 going into Week 3, not undefeated anymore, went up against the Buffalo Bills, and they also got earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of them. Sam Howell looked pretty good the first 2 weeks. Against Buffalo, more turnovers than your local bakery. He looked awful against the Buffalo Bills. 4 interceptions in that game. Throw in another fumble. 5 turnovers for the Washington Commanders, Redskins. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, whatever that fucking team in Landover is called these days. And that game in Landover at FedEx Field looked like a Bills home game, a lots of blue in attendance for that game, a home game allegedly for the Washington Commanders, an absolute embarrassment on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. Then you had what took place in the desert, the upset of the week. The Arizona Cardinals took care of the Dallas Cowboys. Nobody saw that coming. Everybody looks at Arizona as an XFL team. It doesn't help matters that their uniforms look like giant used maxi pads. But there they were, bullying, beating up in the running game, the Dallas Cowboys, who everybody, after the first 2 weeks of the season, after they completely destroyed both New York professional football teams, everybody said this is the best defense in the NFL. They can't be stopped. Now, it didn't help them. It hurt matters for Dallas that Trayvon Diggs, their star defensive back, went down in practice with a torn ACL. That sucks. Never want to see anybody get hurt. Injuries are the worst part of football. That's terrible. Even if you play for the team I hate the most, I'm never going to celebrate anybody getting hurt. Get well soon, Trayvon Diggs. Good luck to you going forward in your recovery and rehab. On Sunday Night Football, maybe the nastiest of the nasty work. For some odd reason, some executive at NBC thought it'd be a great idea to showcase Kenny Pickett versus our good friend of the program, my favorite quarterback, the man, the myth, the legend, Lee Harvey Garoppolo, Jimmy Wilkes Booth, overpaid Trevor Siemian, Jacoby Brissett with privilege. I'm talking about the one, the only, America's favorite quarterback, James Richard Garoppolo, in primetime, making his home debut for the Las Vegas Raiders. And what a debut it was. We'll get to that in a little bit. But however, the week officially started last Thursday in the California Bay Area, Silicon Valley, Santa Clara, California, to be exact, the home of the five-time Super Bowl World Heavyweight Champions, my favorite football team, the San Francisco 49ers, who completely decimated the New York Giants 30-12. No Saquon Barkley in that game. Honestly, it would not have mattered. It made it easier. I'm not gonna sit here and try to deny that. It certainly made things easier, but the Giants, to me, were overachievers last season. Same thing I said about the Taylor Swift music catalog. If you put a gun to somebody's head and said, name two New York Giants receivers, you're going to shoot them in the head. That's homicide. They're going to die. Nobody can name any receivers for the New York Giants. Darius Slayton, Darren Waller at tight end. You got to be a football nerd to even recognize anybody that plays on that fucking offense in New York. Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes, fat payday in the offseason, got taken care of. He's very well compensated. He looked like a deer in headlights, almost literally against the vaunted 49er defense. A famous shot of the game, a photo, a video of Daniel Jones looking completely baffled by the 49er defense, went viral all over the internet and social media, and he was the entire game under duress. Heavy pressure from the 49er defensive line. Nick Bosa finally broke through and got his first sack of the season. A lot of 49er fans, I call them idiots, were criticizing Nick Bosa, the best football player on the team, the most important player on the 49er roster. And you got 49er fans who either don't know any better or are just fucking stupid, who had the audacity to criticize Nick Bosa and say, well, he was too focused on getting his contract. He was too concerned with his money. And the organization paid him and gave him a lot of money, but no sacks in the first two games. And therein lies the problem. Too many folks, all they do is want to look at the stat sheet, the box score. What does it say in the stat sheet? Well, Nick Bosa, zero sacks, so he must not have had any impact whatsoever on the game. No. Incorrect, wrong, bullshit. Even if he doesn't get a sack, he draws attention. He's guaranteed to get a double team. What does that mean? That means everybody else gets to go one-on-one. If Nick Bosa is attracting that much attention and getting consistent double teams in his attempt, his effort to rush the opposing team's quarterback, that means everybody else has an easier path to the quarterback. It's one-on-one. And that Giants offensive line hasn't been good in years. It's not very good right now. They were a turnstile against that mighty 49er pass rush. That was never a game. Never really in doubt. The other story in that game was Brock Purdy. A little inaccurate, a little off course to begin the game. A couple of passes probably should have been picked off. But he finishes up 25 of 37, 310 yards, two touchdowns, and no interceptions, sacked twice. QBR 57.9, that's not the greatest. A little up and down, but overall a pretty good performance. I mean, you get 310 yards from your quarterback, and two touchdowns, no turnovers. We'll take that. His predecessor, the aforementioned James Richard Garoppolo, he would have made that game a lot more difficult. Instead of 30-12 49ers, it would have been more like 20 or 19-12. He would have thrown a pick in the second half inexplicably to keep New York in the football game. Brock Purdy didn't do that. Started off rough, figured it out, settled down. The game plan by Kyle Shanahan, I was very much a fan of that. It made Brock Purdy's job easier. And Deebo Samuel stepped up. No Brandon Ayuk in this game. A clavicle injury that he suffered in week two against the Rams took him out of Thursday night against the Giants. But have no fear, because Tyshawn Raekwon Deebo Samuel is here. In this game, he had 6 catches, 129, 1 touchdown, running people over, all kinds of yak. Christian McCaffrey on the ground. By the way, the league leader in rushing yards, Christian McCaffrey, 18 carries, 85 yards, 4.7 yards per attempt for run CMC. My man George Kittle, stone cold George Kittle, the people's tight end, 7 catches for 90 yards. Ronnie Bell, my guy Ronnie Bell, caught a touchdown pass, 7th round draft pick from the University of Michigan. That's a Jim Harbaugh coach player. What that means is that's a hard-nosed, tough, blue-collar, grown adult man football player. I'm a huge fan of Ronnie Bell already. He really came on and made a name for himself in the preseason. Love the rugged way he plays football. He fits in perfectly with the 49ers, with guys like Deebo and Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, Kittle, CMC, Juszczyk. Ronnie Bell fits in perfectly with that entire mix. Great to have him on the team. 30-12, 49ers, never really in doubt. No question about that game. The 49ers are 3-0, and I've been very adamant about saying this. It's very important. It's imperative, essential, crucial, pivotal that the 49ers begin the season well, as opposed to recent seasons where the Niners get off to a rough start, a little shaky, not quite in midseason form, doesn't appear to be ready to play. We're talking about a 3-5 start in 2021. We're talking about a 1-2 start last season. Losing games on the road at Chicago, at Denver, at Atlanta. 3 teams that missed the playoffs last season. And the 49ers, who made it to the NFC Championship game, could not beat those 3 sorry-ass football teams. Getting off to a rough start to begin the season hurts you late in the season. Yeah, the 49ers always come on tough down the stretch and make a run for it and get all the way to the NFC Championship. But the past 2 times we did that, we lost on the road at Los Angeles and last season at Philadelphia. And to me, the biggest reason we lost those games, the ineptitude displayed early in the season. You fuck around and get off to a slow start. Now you got to play catch up down the stretch. What that means is, instead of playing big time playoff games at home in front of your people, now you got to go on the road across country. Last season, going all the way to Philadelphia to play that NFC Championship game, and you lose. The last 2 times the 49ers have played in the NFC Championship, they lost because it was on the road. The last time we played at home, 2019 against Green Bay, we won that game and advanced to Super Bowl 54. So the point of all this is the Niners really got to stay consistent. Keep winning football games. Stay on this course, because you look at our biggest opposition in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles, they're also 3-0. And they're dominating people up front in the line of scrimmage. That front seven, that offensive line, defensive line, they are nasty in the trenches. Take nothing away from Philadelphia. That team is fucking physical. They get after it. They run people over. They bulldoze their way to victories. They are destroying people. Jalen Hurts is not even on point right now. Jalen Hurts is still figuring some things out. He's not playing clean football right now like he was last season, but it doesn't matter because Philadelphia is so dominant and so physical up front. They are just steamrolling over the opposition so far. And that's going to be our likely opponent. I'm very much looking at a rematch of the 2022 or 23 NFC Championship game in 2024, next calendar year. I'm looking at Philadelphia and San Francisco meeting up again. Dallas could make a run, but losing Trayvon Diggs long-term is going to hurt them. And I think we saw against Arizona, Dallas can be had in the running game as far as run defense is concerned. You can get yards against that front seven and keep Micah Parsons away from rushing your quarterback, but you can do some work on the ground in the running game against Dallas. If Arizona can do that, San Francisco definitely can do it, and Philadelphia absolutely can do it. DeAndre Swift for Philadelphia is a monster. That offensive line he runs behind, the best in pro football. I'm a 49er fan. I got no issue in saying that. The Eagles' offensive line is the best in pro football. The 49ers, we got some work to do on the right side of the offensive line. Colton McKivitz especially, not 100% faith, trust, and confidence in him. Spencer Burford, a little wishy-washy. We got to get better up front. If we're projecting forward to play against Philadelphia, that inevitable matchup, that collision course that San Francisco and Philadelphia appear to be on, we got to get better on that right side of our offensive line. And we got to get better on the defensive line, even though it's pretty good. I like our defensive line. I love Drake Jackson. I think he's been outstanding so far this season. Armstead's been amazing. He's been awesome. Great addition. Javon Kinlaw. Another guy, much maligned, heavily criticized over the years. A lot of people said the Niners should just give up on Javon Kinlaw. No, his fifth year in San Francisco, this is pretty much it for him. Fifth or fourth year, either way, the last year on his contract is make or break. It's now or never. And right now, Javon Kinlaw is playing outstanding football for my beloved San Francisco 49ers. I think we're awesome defensively. Could use another corner. Patrick Surtain might be available. Denver is terrible. Denver is one of many teams that could soon be holding the NFL version of a slave auction and getting rid of as many players as possible in return for draft picks and just looking to start over and look towards next season because this season is already over. So if we can get Patrick Surtain with that $41.5 million in cap space, that'd be great, and also solidify the right side of that offensive line. But make no mistake about it, as far as I'm concerned, the NFC Championship is looking like a rematch. San Francisco and Philadelphia and the Niners need to keep winning to make sure that NFC Championship game this time takes place at Levi's as opposed to Lincoln Financial. Moving on to other games, let's go back to Miami. Let's go back to South Beach. Because there's not enough words to accurately describe what in the teetotal shit took place at Hard Rock Stadium last Sunday between the Denver Broncos and the Miami Dolphins. Good Lord, 70-20? 726 yards of total offense. That's like playing Madden on rookie mode. Except this is real life. This was a real actual legitimate NFL football game, and it wasn't even close. As a matter of fact, you could say that Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. They take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. They're in the air, they're on the ground, they're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl because they are the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, they are the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. If you don't know the words to the Miami Dolphins fight song, clearly you did not watch that game because they scored 70 points. That means that fight song was played about 10 fucking times in the stadium throughout that game. Jesus Christ, 70-20? Are you kidding me? Somebody got to get fired off of that. I don't want to advocate for black folks to lose their job, but Vance Joseph, defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos, you might want to update your LinkedIn resume. What the fuck happened? What is that? What is going on in Denver? Sean Payton was supposed to fix all this. Sean Payton came in during the offseason with all kinds of bluster and bravado, all kinds of arrogance and cockiness and just being real macho about the shit, real braggadocious about everything, and said Nathaniel Hackett, his predecessor, last year's coach of the Denver Broncos, was a joke. He sucked. He had no idea, no clue what he was doing. You can say all that, but you got to back it up, because right now you look even worse than him. There is zero excuse to lose a football game by 50 points. This is not college football. We're not talking about Clemson versus Citadel. We're not talking about Alabama versus, I don't know, Jackson State, DeVry Institute. We're not talking about University of Phoenix Online against USC. This is not a homecoming opponent. Professional football, grown-ass men getting paid, getting compensated handsomely, millions of dollars to go out there and play football, and you lost by 50 points? I know Miami is good. A lot of weapons. More weapons than the United States military. And I'll take this opportunity to issue a formal apology to Tua Tagovailoa. I have criticized you over the years. I've said mean, nasty, derogatory things. I question why Miami even drafted you over Justin Herbert. I have ridiculed your arm strength and arm talent. I was never a huge fan of Tua. I take all that back. Tua Tagovailoa right now, currently, is a top five quarterback in the NFL. You heard what I said. I did not stutter, stammer, or mince any words. Tua Tagovailoa currently is a top five quarterback in the National Football League. And you look at the weapons that he's surrounded by. Tyreek Hill might be the best receiver in the NFL right now. Jaylen Waddle didn't even play in this game. They scored 70 points with no Jaylen Waddle. Are you kidding me right now? Raheem Mostert, former 49er, out there running roughshod, running wild like Hulkamania. Then you talk about Devon Achane, the other running back. I mean, they got dudes everywhere. Robbie Chosen, almost caught myself. The formerly known Robbie Anderson caught a touchdown pass in this game in garbage time. He caught a touchdown pass from Skylar Thompson, the backup Dolphins quarterback. They absolutely crushed the buildings on the Denver Broncos. If you're Denver, what do you even do going forward? What do you do looking at that tape? Do you just burn that film and start over again and say, fuck it, we can't be that bad in consecutive weeks? I don't know. And next week, speaking of consecutive weeks, the Toilet Bowl in Chicago, Illinois, the Bears and the Broncos, somebody, the NFL, that's on Monday Night Football, by the way. That's a primetime football game for the entire country to consume. The NFL should flex that game to the Home Shopping Network at 4:13 a.m. on Thursday morning. Who wants to see that fucking game? I'm a football nerd. I'll watch it. But good Lord, you want to talk about two awful football teams, and they have the audacity to be on the schedule playing each other on Monday Night Football? Lord have mercy. If you know a Bears or Broncos fan, pray for them. They need all the help you can get, because those two teams are completely miserable right now. But on the flip side of that are the Miami Dolphins, who, in my opinion, will be playing in the AFC Championship game this season. If, big time if, Tua Tagovailoa stays healthy, if Tua can stay upright and healthy and be available for the playoffs, I got no doubt the Miami Dolphins are going to play in the AFC Championship game and might even fuck around and get to the Super Bowl. Go ahead and pencil in Kansas City for the AFC Championship game, because that's just what it is. Five consecutive seasons, the Chiefs have played in the AFC Championship. It's just a matter of who their opponent is going to be. Could it be Buffalo? It could be. I respect the Buffalo Bills. It could be the Buffalo Bills. By the way, Buffalo and Miami play this Sunday. That's going to be, in my opinion, the game of the week. It could be Buffalo. Even though Cincinnati is 1-2, I'm not going to count them out. I got that much respect for the Cincinnati Bengals. The Baltimore Ravens also deserve respect. If, once again, if Lamar Jackson can stay healthy for Baltimore, they can go to the AFC Championship. Those teams, but in my opinion, at least early on in my estimation, it's Miami right now. You look at how well Tua is playing, how accurate and on time and decisive he is with his throws, the assertiveness of his passing. You look at the speed on that football team. Tyreek Hill, Raheem Mostert, A-Chain, Jalen Waddle, when he comes back, they got a bunch of guys that can run about 25 miles per hour. Somebody posted this stat earlier or yesterday. You look at the fastest ball carriers in the NFL this season, it's all Miami Dolphins. It's all guys that play for the Dolphins. They're fast. That team is quick. They got a bunch of guys on their roster that can turn off a light switch and be in bed before it gets dark. They are fast. And you look at the pre-snap motion. The offense they play in is pretty much the Kyle Shanahan offense. Mike McDaniel, head coach in Miami, formerly an assistant coach, offensive coordinator, run game coordinator for my beloved San Francisco 49ers, took the Shanahan offense down to South Beach, got a bunch of track stars, and went out there with a deadly accurate quarterback and started fucking shit up. Miami is one of those teams you do not want to see right now. They're dangerous. That's a nasty football team right now. They're good. The offensive line is good. Nothing but respect for the Miami Dolphins. Defensively, my man Vic Fangio, former defensive coordinator. See, everything comes back to the 49ers. Vic Fangio, former defensive coordinator for the 49ers when Jim Harbaugh was coaching there. Now he's currently coordinating the defense in Miami. And oh, by the way, Jalen Ramsey got hurt in training camp. He's not even there right now. Wait till he comes back and that defense gets even better. They're going to start rolling. They're already rolling right now. Once again, if Tua, it's all about the quarterback. It's all about Tua. If he stays healthy, Miami is a dangerous football team. Trust and believe. And everybody, by the end of the season, is going to know all the words to the Miami Dolphins fight song. Now, the antithesis to all the joy and euphoria and hysteria taking place in South Beach about their amazing football team, the Miami Dolphins, the antithesis to all that is the misery, the dread, the melancholy, crestfallen nature of New York Jets fans. So much hype and expectations coming into this season. They got Aaron Rodgers. They made the biggest splash of the NFL offseason. They went out and got a future first ballot Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, to play quarterback for their team. They felt like we are a quarterback away from being a playoff team, dare I say, even a Super Bowl team. So you go out and get Aaron Rodgers. And all the hype, all the pomp and circumstance, the anticipation, the expectations, the celebratory nature of Jets fans leading into the season, being on Hard Knocks, seeing Aaron Rodgers and how passionate and enthusiastic, how happy he appeared to be, being in New York, offseason, going to Knicks playoff games, going to Rangers games, Yankees games. He ingratiated himself with New York City and everything that encompasses all of that. It seemed like a match made in heaven, a perfect fit. And then on Monday Night Football, week one, on September 11th, obviously in New York City, the significance of September 11th cannot be lost. We are commemorating September 11th on this night before the football game. Aaron Rodgers, the man of the hour, the most famous man on the field, the big-time star, the free agent acquisition, the future Hall of Famer. He runs onto the field with the American flag. 80,000 people go crazy, ballistic, bonkers. And then four plays into the season. Four plays is all it took for all of that to be over. And Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles, out for the rest of the season. Awful, terrible, and unfortunate turn of events for the New York Jets and the New York Jet fan base, who have been through so much for 50 years. They waited for this. This was the quarterback they've been waiting for since Joe Namath. So Aaron Rodgers is out. He's done, gone for the season. Here comes Zach Wilson, the guy they selected number two overall in that what is now becoming infamous 2021 draft, especially for the quarterbacks taken in that draft. Jesus. Zach Wilson has been terrible the entire time he's been in the NFL playing for the Jets. But now you got another chance, another opportunity. Aaron Rodgers goes down. Even though your own team doesn't even like you, they went out and got Aaron Rodgers because they decided, they decreed that you suck. You're garbage. You're not good. We can't win if you are our quarterback. If you're playing quarterback for the New York Jets, we don't have a chance. We don't believe in you. The organization pretty much said that. Last season, going to a road game, his own teammates are wearing homemade t-shirts endorsing the backup quarterback, Mike White. The locker room doesn't want you. The fan base doesn't want you. The organization doesn't want you. But here you are, once again, right back on center stage. You got the opportunity again to solidify yourself as the starting quarterback of the New York Jets and to fix your career, to right the wrongs, to get back on track. And needless to say, Zach Wilson hasn't done any of that. He's been garbage. To fully illustrate just how terrible, just how pathetic and anemic Zach Wilson has been as a pro football quarterback in the NFL, here now are some numbers. His entire career, Zach Wilson has completed 54.9% of his passes. That is ranked dead last for all quarterbacks since 2021. Let's talk about his passing yards per game. Maybe it gets better. Maybe he's throwing for a lot of yards. I don't know. No, he's not. 179.6, that ranks 32 out of all eligible quarterbacks since 2021. Passing yards per attempt, 6.3, that ranks 33rd. That's not good. His touchdown to interception ratio, my favorite stat. If you really want to accurately evaluate a pro football quarterback or any quarterback in general, if you really want to find out whether or not a quarterback is playing well versus playing like shit, to me, in my opinion, look no further than touchdown to interception ratio. That's a great demonstration, a great illustration, I should say, of how often you do something well versus how often you fuck up. Zach Wilson's touchdown to interception ratio, 17 touchdown passes, 22 interceptions, dead last out of all eligible quarterbacks since 2021, and a passer rating of 69.2. Guess where that ranks? Dead last. He's either last or 32nd or 33rd. You add it all up, carry the one, subtract the two, divide by three, Pythagorean theorem, Zach Wilson fucking sucks. That's the equation you get when you add all that up. That's the end result. Zach Wilson fucking sucks. I sat here on this podcast 2 years ago and I told the entire world, well, a couple 50 or 75,000 people that listen to the Dion Gordon podcast, closing in on 100,000 viewers, listeners, whatever. I told anybody that listens to this podcast that Zach Wilson would be my number one pick in that 2021 NFL draft. I'm a firm believer in transparency and accountability. If you do something wrong, you got to own up to it. If you make a mistake, if you said something was going to happen and it didn't happen, you got to own it. You got to own what you said. Stand on your word. I told people that Zach Wilson was going to be a great NFL quarterback. I was wrong. Zach Wilson has been the drizzling shits in the NFL. He sucks. It just isn't there. The arm talent, yes. Can he make any and every throw on the football field? Can he go out there like he did at his pro day before he got drafted and electrify the crowd and dazzle the audience with spectacular throws, rolling to his left, throwing across his body 50, 60, 70 yards, flick of the wrist, the ball explodes out of his hands. He can do all that. Extraordinary arm talent. Unfortunately, he sucks at everything else. The mental aspect of playing football, reading coverages, anticipating throws, being a leader of men. The men in that Jets locker room don't trust or respect, or I don't even think even like him. And to further compound things for Zach Wilson, the greatest New York Jet of all time, a living legend, a man who was firmly entrenched in the New York Jets Mount Rushmore. The only Jets quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl 50 years ago. Super Bowl III, he guaranteed victory and then went out there and delivered. Joe Willie Namath went on the Michael Kay radio show on ESPN Radio. And off the top rope, he gave Zach Wilson a 5-star frog splash, the Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop, a 450 splash, the Jeff Hardy Swanton bomb. Joe Namath completely annihilated Zach Wilson on the radio. He threw this man under the bus, put it in reverse, and then forward, and then reverse again. Good Lord. The shit that Joe Namath said. Listen, if anybody's going to be critical of the New York Jets, If anybody has the right to do so, it's certainly the greatest player in franchise history, Joe Namath. He flat out said, I'm done with Zach Wilson. I'm done with him. I don't believe in him. He's got some arm talent, some footwork. He's kind of fast. That's about it. He doesn't have it upstairs. Those are not my words. Those are the words of Joe Namath. He said this. He was asked about Zach Wilson and went on a five-minute diatribe, a five-minute crime spree. That ether, that shit that makes your soul burn slow, that was ether. Hit him up, no Vaseline, takeover, all rolled into one. That was a diss track. Put some music behind that. Put some production behind what Joe Namath said about Zach Wilson. Michael Kay said, he asked Joe, he said, let's say hypothetically, the Jets gave Zach Wilson to you and told you to try to get you to fix him, to mentor him. What would you do? What would Joe Namath do with Zach Wilson? His response, I'd send him to Kansas City, sit him behind Mahomes. Maybe then he can learn something. As far as I'm concerned, it's over for Zach Wilson in New York. How do you come back from that? The organization gave up on you. Your teammates don't even like you. They endorsed a backup quarterback last season. They don't believe in him. Joe Namath also said that. How does Robert Saleh go in front of the media, stand in front of a podium and say, I believe in Zach Wilson. He's going to be our quarterback going forward. He doesn't believe that. Nobody believes that. Sauce Gardner doesn't believe that. Breece Hall doesn't believe that. Garrett Wilson does not believe that. Quinnen Williams doesn't believe that. Nobody in that locker room believes that Zach Wilson gives them the best chance to win a football game. And clearly, the greatest New York Jet of all time, and arguably, in my opinion, maybe the most important football player ever, Joe Namath, went on the radio and absolutely destroyed Zach Wilson like that publicly. I was taken aback by that. I wasn't offended. I was just surprised that Joe would even do that. He doesn't really do shit like that often. No one does. Typically, a legendary player for a particular franchise does not go out of his way to eviscerate, to verbally fuck up a current player on the roster. I grew up in Maryland, close by to the Washington Redskins, as they were known when I was growing up. Their own legendary quarterback, Joe Theismann, is always on the radio, always on television. Joey T loves to talk. Joe Theismann loves the sound of his own voice. Nothing wrong with that. I'm kind of the same way. The point is, whenever Joe Theismann is asked on a local D.C. Maryland radio show his thoughts about the quarterback position for the Washington Redskins, it doesn't matter who it was, he always had nice things to say. Even if the quarterback was struggling and not playing well, he would give constructive criticism. He'd say, you know what, you know, things aren't working out for him. Things are not going his way. Things could be better. You know, we got to work on this. We as a team got to work on certain things. Joey T never threw any Redskins quarterback under the bus. Doesn't matter. You could talk about Jason Campbell. Donovan McNabb in Washington was a goddamn disaster. He was garbage. When he played for Washington, Joe Theismann never threw him under the bus. Patrick Ramsey, Danny Warfel, Shane Matthews, whoever, Mark Brunell, whoever, Todd Collins, the list goes on. Joe Theismann never killed him. Steve Young for the 49ers has always been supportive of any 49er quarterback. Trey Lance, there was no more vocal supporter for the media than Steve Young for Trey Lance. Always backed up Trey. Always backed up Jimmy Garoppolo. Always backed up Jeff Garcia back in the day. Alex Smith, in between all that, same thing. Steve Young, always supportive, encouraging of whoever was the 49er quarterback. You never heard Steve Young say, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo sucks. He's trash. I don't believe in him. He doesn't have it upstairs. He never said that. Joe Montana, same thing. Even though Joe Montana, and you could tell by his comments, Joe Montana was never really supportive of Trey Lance, but he never went on a radio show and just buried Trey Lance the way that Joe Namath went on Michael Kay's ESPN radio show and completely threw dirt on Zach Wilson. That was ugly. And to me, the end is near for Zach Wilson in New York. If I was the Jets, I'd make a phone call to Minnesota, currently 0-3, and I would try to get my man, 1 o'clock Kirk Cousins, on a one-year rental. You got to do something. You got to do something to salvage the season. Everything was based around Aaron Rodgers, predicated on Aaron Rodgers being healthy and available. Really, New York should have known better. He's 39, about to be 40. You don't know about his longevity in the first place. Now he has a torn Achilles. He's out for the season. And your backup plan, literally, your backup quarterback to Aaron Rodgers was Zach Wilson. You've seen him start 24 games in the NFL. He's 8-16. And even though I hate that stat, I hate quarterback win-loss stats, I already read off his individual stats. You look at those numbers, it's shit. It's complete shit. He is the drizzling shits right now as a quarterback in the NFL. And for him, how much confidence can Zach Wilson possibly have in himself, knowing all those things I already said, knowing the organization gave up on you, they went out and got Aaron Rodgers, knowing your own teammates don't trust or believe in you, knowing the coaching staff also probably doesn't honestly, authentically believe in you, knowing the fan base can't stand you, and now Joe Namath goes on the radio and took a shit on your name? How much confidence does Zach Wilson have right now? It can't be anything. And they're playing Kansas City this Sunday. They're playing the fucking Chiefs at home, Sunday night football in New Jersey, in the Meadowlands. Zach Wilson is going to struggle. The Chiefs have a good defense. Quiet is kept. Everybody looks at Kansas City and focuses on the offense. And with good reason. Andy Reid, Mahomes, Kelsey, etc. Great offense for so many years. But their defense is playing at a high level right now. I would say their defense right now is better than the offense. Chris Jones got re-signed. He's back. Their defense right now is really fucking people up. So you take all that and throw that against Zach Wilson this Sunday, he's going to drown. That water's too deep for him. He's going to drown. Throw him a life preserver, put some floaties around his arm. It doesn't matter. He has an anchor attached to him. He's going to drown this Sunday. And that might be the last start he ever has for the New York Jets. It's going to be no limit sneaker, Lizzo ass, sexy red, ugly for Zach Wilson this Sunday against your defending world champion, Kansas City Chiefs. Moving on, and speaking of shitty quarterbacks, you know, I saved the best for last. I'm building up to this. I was working my way towards this. Like I said earlier, the nastiest of the nasty work might have been NBC's decision. The audacity, the temerity, the unmitigated gall to put in primetime Kenny Pickett versus Jimmy Garoppolo. My favorite quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh, what a game he had on Sunday night. Listen closely. The greatest lie the devil ever told was convincing people that he doesn't exist. The second greatest lie ever told was the national media convincing the general public that Jimmy Garoppolo is a good NFL quarterback. I always knew that was a lie. I sat here on this podcast repeatedly, incessantly, and I told all of you that was an absolute lie. All I kept hearing was the 49ers win because of Jimmy Garoppolo, and I was quick to correct people and tell them and remind them, no. They don't win because of Jimmy Garoppolo. They win with Jimmy Garoppolo. But I had people telling me, oh, it's going to be different in Las Vegas. He no longer has to play under the careful eye of Kyle Shanahan. He's no longer going to be out there playing in handcuffs, restricted. Now he's in a free-flowing offense, that Patriots offense. Josh McDaniel, the head coach in Las Vegas, formerly offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, and he had Jimmy Garoppolo as a backup to the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, many years ago. And so many people thought, and they told me, there's going to be a seamless transition. You're going to see the real Jimmy Garoppolo now. He has no restrictions. He can do whatever he wants. Kyle was trying to micromanage the game and micromanage Jimmy. And Jimmy can now just do whatever he wants. Carte blanche. Freedom. He can play quarterback under his terms. Well, we see how that's working out right now. Do you know who currently leads the NFL in interceptions thrown? I know the answer. James Richard Garoppolo. The Raiders are 1-2. In the one game they won, they barely scored 17 points. Who was their opponent that day? Was it a team that's known for having a vaunted, legendary, strong, powerful, impenetrable defense? No, it was the team that gave up 70 fucking points last Sunday, the Denver Broncos. And against that same team, that same defense, the Jimmy Garoppolo-led Raider offense only scored a measly 17 points against a team that just gave up 70. And the week before that, they made Sam Howell look like a top 10 NFL quarterback. They blew a 21-3 lead against him. The Broncos defense is completely embarrassing. And yet, the Jimmy Garoppolo-led Raider offense could only muster up 17 points against them. They go on the road to Buffalo the following week. They scored 13 points in that game. And then only 18 points scored on Sunday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have not broken 20 points in a game yet this season. And what do I see out there on Sunday night? Oh, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, it's like watching your favorite band play live in concert, and they play all your favorite songs, all the greatest hits. I saw awful, complete dog shit footwork from Jimmy Garoppolo. He looked like he was out there stomping grapes to make wine. Jittery in the pocket. Does he take pre-workout before the game? Is Jimmy Garoppolo consuming like 14 cups of coffee before he goes out there? Why is he so jittery all the time? There's a reason people call him Jittery G. Because he looks like he's having a fucking seizure in the pocket. His feet never stop moving. And is never productive. It's not even trying to get in the right position to throw the football. He had a pick in that game that brought a smile to my face. That made me laugh. It filled my heart with joy. Plenty of time in the pocket. Not that much pressure. Plenty of time to sit there in the pocket, go through your progressions, read the defense, and make an accurate throw to a, hopefully, a wide open, well, at least an open receiver. Somebody on your team. Somebody also wearing silver and black. What does Jimmy Garoppolo do? None of that. Jimmy Garoppolo dancing in the pocket. Dance, dance, revolution. Crip walking in the pocket. Falling down to his left, throws across his body, across the field, to the right side of the field, and gets picked off by Patrick Peterson. And when I saw that, I can't tell you how loud I laughed. I erupted with laughter. I bursted into laughter when I saw this. And I thought to myself, you know what? A year ago, I would have been stressed out. I would have been pissed off. I'd have been upset. Got to go outside, take a walk. Cursing at my TV, I'd have been mad as hell. I would have been hotter than fish grease about a year ago if Lee Harvey Garoppolo had done this insane bullshit while wearing a 49er uniform. But now he's wearing the silver and black. He's no longer my problem. I don't care anymore. I just find it funny. I just laugh at it now. It's hilarious. It's a great time. You know, currently in modern day entertainment, there really aren't that many great comedians left anymore, except Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is the funniest man on the planet. Just watch him play quarterback. It's hilarious. It's Richard Pryor live at the Sunset Strip. It's Eddie Murphy delirious. It's Chris Rock bigger and blacker. It's Dave Chappelle for what it's worth. It's fucking hilarious. This dude is so shitty as a quarterback. Just so god-awful. Footwork, mechanics, decision-making, accuracy. I counted about four hospital balls thrown in this game. Devontae Adams should file a lawsuit against Jimmy Garoppolo for what Jimmy consistently and continually does to him throughout these games. He's going to get him hurt. He's going to get Devontae Adams hurt at some point during this season. Hospital balls. If you forgot what a hospital ball means, I'll be more than happy to articulate it once again, the definition of a hospital ball. A hospital ball is otherwise known as wildly inaccurate pass thrown over the middle that forces the intended receiver to risk life and limb to catch this abysmal pass that, from the looks of it, was intended for Giannis Antetokounmpo or Joel Embiid or Kevin Durant, because you got to be 7 feet tall to catch this motherfucker. That's a hospital ball. And Jimmy Garoppolo, no one, nobody does it any better than James Richard Garoppolo, Lee Harvey Garoppolo, Jimmy Wilkes Booth, overpaid Trevor Siemian, Jacoby Brissett with privilege, my favorite NFL quarterback, the most entertaining, the most elect, with all apologies, with all due respect to The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, the most electrifying man in all of sports and entertainment is Jimmy Garoppolo. It's awesome. And I'm so happy he's no longer in a 49er uniform. Brock Purdy does not do the dumbass shit that Jimmy Garoppolo does. He's wearing silver and black now. He's no longer my problem. He had a couple of picks in this game because that's what he does. That's who he is. That's what he does. He ruins the football game for your favorite team. If I'm the Raiders, I'll say fuck it and just go ahead and start Aiden O'Connell, the rookie quarterback out of Purdue. I like what I saw from him in preseason. It can't be any worse because Jimmy Garoppolo is a walking, living, breathing detriment to any football team he plays for. I've said this for many years, and based on the way Garoppolo has played so far in three games for the Raiders, I have been validated and vindicated. Everything I ever said about Jimmy Garoppolo is true. I always knew it was true, and now I'm seeing proof and evidence of that. And to that point, I'll take this opportunity. I issued an apology to Tua Tagovailoa earlier. Now I'll apologize to my head coach, Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan was basically Jesus Christ for the 49ers. Jesus turned water into wine. Kyle Shanahan turned Jimmy Garoppolo into a somewhat competent NFL quarterback. That is a modern-day miracle. That is an absolute miracle that Kyle Shanahan was able to get as much as he did out of Jimmy Garoppolo and made him look like a competent NFL quarterback, even sometimes made him look like an elite NFL quarterback every now and then. He's a miracle worker. I take everything I ever said about Kyle back. I'm sorry. I apologize. If you want a handwritten 500-word apology, I'll be more than happy to do that. I'm sorry. I take back everything I ever said about Kyle Shanahan. The fact that he even got as much as he did out of Jimmy Garoppolo is an absolute miracle. Now, Jimmy's current head coach, Josh McDaniels, is not going to escape the wrath of criticism from one Deion Sauré Gordon because he is as overrated of a head coach as Jimmy is as a quarterback. They belong together. Like a Mariah Carey song, they belong together. The most overrated coach currently in the NFL and the most overrated quarterback currently in the NFL. And they're together in Las Vegas and they deserve each other. They belong together. All this talk about McDaniels being a genius, a boy wonder, an offensive guru for so many years because the Patriots always had great offenses. You know why the Patriots always had great offenses? They had the greatest quarterback of all time. They had Tom fucking Brady. That's why Josh McDaniels looked like a competent offensive coordinator, a dynamic play caller. It's easy to look like a dynamic play caller when you have the GOAT under center for you. What has Josh McDaniels ever accomplished without Tom Brady? He was a head coach in Denver. Got fired. They were trash. He verbally accepted the job in Indianapolis and then changed his mind and went back to New England. So who is he really? What's going on in Vegas right now? Nothing. Like I said, that offense has yet to break 20 points so far. Where is the dynamic offensive play caller I was told existed? I don't think it does exist. I think it's a myth, a fallacy, a fable, a tall tale, a lie, a misnomer. To say that Josh McDaniels is an elite offensive mind and play caller in the NFL, the audacity is only surpassed by the mendacity. It's a goddamn lie. It was never true. Take Tom Brady out the equation, and who the fuck is Josh McDaniels? An overrated head coach. Also not very good at clock management or decision making. You go back to that game on a Sunday night against Pittsburgh. Raiders take the ball down the field, starting fast. Garoppolo threw a touchdown pass to Devontae Adams early in the game. They go for it on fourth down. Nice throw by Jimmy. I give credit where credit is due. A nice throw by Jimmy Garoppolo. Great catch by Devontae Adams. That's what he does. Touchdown Raiders. Jimmy always gets off to a nice start. McDaniels, as a play caller, is very good at the beginning of the game. That opening script, the first 15 plays, he's awesome at that. Unfortunately, there's more than 15 plays in an NFL football game, and the rest of the game, he's dog shit, and Garoppolo is also dog shit as a quarterback. But In this game on Sunday night against Pittsburgh, they're down 23-7. This was after that hideous interception that Garoppolo threw to Patrick Peterson. Pittsburgh takes the ball down the field. Pat Freiermuth from Penn State catches the touchdown pass from Kenny Pickett to make it 23-7 Pittsburgh. Devontae Adams on the following drive for the Raiders catches a one-yard touchdown pass to go for the two-point conversion. My man Michael Mayer from Notre Dame, another great Notre Dame tight end in the NFL, or at least he should be great. I think he will be great. Michael Mayer catches the two-point conversion. It's 23-15. They get the ball back. They drive down to the Pittsburgh 8-yard line. They get stopped. And McDaniels, inexplicably, unbelievably, ridiculously, unconscionably, decides to kick a field goal. Time is running out. It's late in the fucking game. You're down 23-18. What are you kicking? Or 23-15. You kick the field goal and make it 23-18. He's in the post game. He said, my thought process was about getting extra possessions. No, dude, you need a fucking score. It's 23-15. Score a touchdown in that situation. Go for two again. You tie the game. It's basic mathematics. What are you talking about? You wanted another possession. No, score right now. That's completely baffling, mind-boggling to even do something like that. So now we're talking about decision-making, clock management, sense of urgency. You know, the Raider offense is just walking around, loafing around the field, a very lethargic, lackadaisical performance being led by Garoppolo. And then you look at Garoppolo's overall ineptitude at quarterback throughout the game. All of that, to me, is a complete indictment on Josh McDaniels as a head coach. Not a very good head coach. Mike Tomlin, the opposing head coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, so many people criticize Coach Tomlin after the 49ers came in there on week one and kicked their ass 30-7 and said Mike Tomlin's lost it. The offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, should be fired. Pittsburgh is 2-1 right now. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 2-1 right now. Never under any circumstances doubt, disrespect, or count out Mike Tomlin, a top three coach in the NFL right now. Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin, Kyle Shanahan. Like I said, I'm very apologetic right now to Kyle Shanahan. I take back a lot of what I said. It could be worse. I've begun to see that now. You know, things could be worse. Kyle and John Lynch got extended, as a matter of fact, after the Giants game. I'm happy about that. Good. The 49ers are a good football team, a great football team. They're consistently in the mix, a perennial playoff contender in San Francisco. Haven't accomplished the ultimate prize yet. Haven't won a Super Bowl. Came up short a lot of years. Obviously, you would like to see a different outcome. But when you look around the NFL, you look at teams like Denver and Chicago, these just complete worthless football teams, just awful, embarrassing performances, giving up 70 points and losing by 50 and 726 yards. You look at the fucking Bears, they're an absolute goddamn mess. They've ruined Justin Fields. He sucks as an NFL quarterback. He's never going to make it. He's similar to Zach Wilson. They're never going to make it in this league. Justin Fields is the modern-day Terrell Pryor. He's not good. You look at other teams in the NFL that consistently, year in and year out, just can't walk and chew gum at the same time. As a Niner fan, I look at that and I say to myself, you know what? Even though we haven't won a Super Bowl, at least we're not that. At least we're not out here getting dog walked by 50 fucking points. At least we're not those guys. Even though we haven't accomplished the ultimate goal, we have not won a Lombardi Trophy since January 29th, 1995. I make that point all the time, and I would love to see it happen. Even though Kyle Shanahan has yet to really develop or find his franchise quarterback in 7 years, I'm still not ready to anoint Brock Purdy as that franchise quarterback. Even with all those things being said, at least we're not Denver. At least we're not Chicago. At least we're not the dregs of the NFL at the very bottom feeders of the National Football League. At least we're constantly always in the mix. And we have, you know, I look at it this way. If you reach conference championship Sunday, that means you have a 25% chance of winning the Super Bowl. If you get in the Super Bowl, now obviously you have a 50% chance. The odds are in your favor. I'd rather be a team that's always in the mix than a team that's on the clock for the first pick in the NFL draft by week three. And that's who and what the Chicago Bears and Denver Broncos are right now. The two worst teams in pro football. At least the 49ers aren't that. The Raiders are not that far behind, though. A few more thoughts about week three. My man CJ Stroud, quarterback I was very high on coming into this most recent NFL draft. The only Ohio State quarterback I ever liked. It's proven me right. He's top five in the NFL in passing yards. He's playing at a high level. He's consistent. And the Houston Texans won their first game of the season last Sunday against Jacksonville. I think CJ Stroud, like I said, I believe in him. The only Buckeye quarterback I believe in. This past Sunday against Jacksonville on the road against a team that won that division last year and made the playoffs and advanced to the divisional round of the playoffs. They won a playoff game last season in Jacksonville. CJ Stroud goes on the road, 20-30, 280, two tutties, no picks, no turnovers. Quarterback QBR, 83.6, quarterback rating, 118.8. Congratulations on your first win. Also, congratulations to former 49er defensive coordinator, my man D'Amico Ryans, on his first ever victory as an NFL head coach. That was awesome. I was very happy to see that. Also, on Sunday, Jordan Love, quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, the man that supplanted Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. They're 2-1 right now, and they overcame a 17-0 lead in the fourth quarter. They scored 18 unanswered points to beat New Orleans. That ain't nothing to sneeze at. The Saints are a good football team, especially on defense. You put together an 18-point fourth quarter and come back and win the game after getting off to a rocky start, not playing well. I'm impressed. I'm a major, major fan of Jordan Love. I was very high on him coming out of Utah State. As a matter of fact, I was hoping the 49ers were going to take him a couple years ago. He came out in that 2020 NFL draft. I mean, I was already soured on Garoppolo by that point. So I was hoping that Jordan Love might be the guy that the 49ers take. We didn't. Green Bay took him. He's waited his turn for a number of years behind Aaron Rodgers, and now he's making the most out of it. I think he's played very well so far on Sunday. Like I said, you're down 17, nothing to come back and win 18-17. Jordan Love, 22 of 44, not the most accurate numbers, 50% completions, but 259, one touchdown, one pick. And in the fourth quarter, when it mattered the most to win the game, he rallies the team. Where else in the NFL? Deshaun Watson, bounce back performance. Everybody slandered and criticized this man. Another quarterback, much maligned. Everybody said he's trash. What the fuck happened to Deshaun Watson? He hadn't played football in a year. What the fuck do you even expect? Not a great performance on Monday night against Pittsburgh. They lost Nick Chubb in that game to a nasty knee injury, terrible injury. It looked worse than it actually is. I think it's only an MCL. Easy for me to say. It's not my fucking knees, but it looked a lot worse. It looked catastrophic. It looked devastating, but it's really not that bad. He could come back later on this season, but Deshaun Watson struggled in that game, and everybody on all the shows, all the networks threw him under the bus. I think a lot of that is motivated by the off-the-field issues for Deshaun Watson. I think Deshaun Watson is one of those guys that the powers that be, the higher-ups, the people at ESPN, Fox, the media, have decided, you know, we're going to treat this guy like a pariah. We're going to treat this guy like he's less than. He's not worthy of praise, of being spoken about in a positive way. When he has a good game, they swept it under the rug. They say, well, you know, he could have done this, he could have done that. No, he won the game. He played at a very high level. So let's acknowledge that. If we're going to slander and criticize somebody when they have a bad game, let's boost them up. Let's call it out and be accurate and honest when they have a good game. When somebody goes on the field and it's 27-33, 289, two touchdowns, no turnovers, and they win the game by 24 points, that deserves praise and recognition. I'll give it to Deshaun Watson, even if nobody else wants to. The opposing quarterback in that game, the other quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Listen, I'm obviously not a Tennessee Titans fan. There's only about 74 people on this planet that are. But for those 74 people that call themselves Titans fans, you got to be saying, why the fuck is Ryan Tannehill even on the field? If we're going to do this and we're going to lose anyway, why not put Will Levis on the field, the rookie you took this season, or the rookie you took last season, Malik Willis? Put one of them in the game. If I'm a Titans fan, I'd rather see that. I already know what I got in Tannehill. I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing in Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback. We already know this. What is the point? He's East Coast Garoppolo. I always said this for a lot of years. Ryan Tannehill was East Coast Jimmy Garoppolo. The only way he can function is if everything around him is perfect, similar to Jimmy Garoppolo. He needs Derrick Henry to rush for 200 yards every week just so he can look functional. So when that doesn't happen, now you got to put the onus on Ryan Tannehill. The ball, the game is in his hands. And what's he do? Nothing. He goes out there 13-25, 104, no touchdowns, no picks, but still, he gets sacked five times, QBR 23.3. You suck. Ryan Tannehill's always been this way. I've never been impressed by him. I don't understand why Mike Vrabel and Tennessee continue to give him an opportunity. I don't get it. Just put the young guys on the field and go from there and see what you got. You got to figure it out at some point, and you got to stop lying to yourself, your fan base, and your locker room and thinking and trying to have them believe that Ryan Tannehill gives you the best chance to win a football game when he absolutely doesn't. So that pretty much wraps it up. NFL Week 3 in review. I try to condense it a little bit, try to quickly go to all these different games. Still got an hour. Hopefully you're still with me, stuck with me the whole time. I'm happy. I'm a 49er fan. We're 3-0. We're kicking ass. We're dominating. A lot of Niner fans are complaining about Brock Purdy. Why? Why? You just saw Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you want him back? I think some 49er fans do. I don't. As much as I like Trey Lance, I mean, Brock Purdy's better. I got to be honest. I got to call it right down the middle. There's some things about Purdy I am worried about, but I'm not going to complain or nitpick about it right now. We're 3-0. Now, if it catches up to him later on in other games as the season continues, then I'll call it out. But right now, I'm happy. I'm good with Brock Purdy. The Attitude Era, the Suplex Resist, the next big thing. I'm happy about Brock Purdy being the quarterback of the 49ers. I'm happy about the overall direction right now of the 49ers. I got nothing to complain about with my favorite football team. So that's why I'll trash other people's football teams and be happy doing that. So with all that being said, this concludes this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, to tread lightly, like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.